This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
They call it the red metal. The tales of the big copper strike today. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Workers at the biggest copper mine in the world went on strike this morning. It's the Escondida mine in Chile, and this is driving up the world price for the essential element. From Santiago, Chile, the BBC's Jane Chambers explained to me today how copper defines the Chilean economy.
Copper, or the red metal, that's their largest export. It's about 20% of their GDP. It produces about a third of the world's copper market. And Escondida, the mine that we're talking about, it provides around 5% of the world market.
Now, the dispute is over pay?
Yes. So it all started because at the end of January, that was the end of a three-year wage agreement, and the workers have actually rejected the new one. They want a 7% pay increase and a bonus of around $38,000. And they're saying that they want the same rights and benefits for people working there, for all of the people.
And from the company's point of view, BHP Billiton, what are they saying?
They say that they're actually the best paid workers in the mining industry in the whole of Chile, and that really what they're asking for is not viable. I mean, it's been a tough year for the mining industry in Chile. I went up north to talk to some of the miners earlier on last year in kind of May, April, and prices then, they're around $2.26, which was very low. And things have picked up in the last half of the year. So things were hard with China at the beginning of the year. That got better. Then you've got Donald Trump's election as well, which seemed to have an effect on the market with this idea that he'd have lots of projects that they need to sell copper for.
The BBC's Jane Chambers in Santiago, Chile. Jane, thank you.
Thank you.
The number of people signing up for unemployment benefits hit a nearly three-month low in the last week, a reminder amid all the political news that the economy is still where we live and breathe. On Thursdays, we consult Diane Swank, CEO of DS Economics.
We know that unemployment claims continue to come down, and that suggests that the labor market is really continuing to gain momentum. Regardless of the election, we were entering 2017 on better footing than we entered 2016, and that set us up very well. I think it's also really important to note the wages that look like they slowed in the month of January on a year-over-year basis actually was a bit of a head fake. Much of that decline in wage gains came from one sector, financial services sector, where some major companies did not allocate bonuses as they once did. That doesn't matter to most of the mainstream of those people earning wages out there, and we're going to see that kind of flush out of the data as we go to the months ahead, and you'll see some nice, decent wages picking up as we get to mid-year.
Economist Diane Swank. Although it's not getting the critical or audience attention of maybe La La Land or Moonlight, students of entrepreneurship may want to study the recent Michael Keaton movie. It's called The Founder. Keaton plays Ray Kroc, the traveling salesman who made McDonald's what it is. But note that he's not the founder. The two guys in California who created McDonald's were Mac and Dick McDonald, whom Kroc buys out. Note that The Founder is a biopic, not a documentary, something journalist Lisa Napoli kept reminding herself watching it. She's author of the nonfiction book about the McDonald's story called Ray and Joan.
They didn't want to expand. Their life was great. They were buying new Cadillacs every year. They were working hard in their McDonald's restaurant, but they knew if they sold out that they would be working even more than they were now and that they wouldn't be able to maintain the quality that they'd achieved in their restaurant. So they were ambitious enough, but they weren't hyper ambitious to dominate the world.
So there's a crucial moment in the film where Ray Kroc wants to get out from underneath this longstanding contract that he has with the original McDonald's brothers. The McDonald's brothers can decide almost everything about how McDonald's does its business. Ray Kroc wants out. So they cut a deal, but there seems to be what? This agreement. The original McDonald's brothers want to get a percentage of future profits.
That's the essential falsehood in the movie. Basically, what happened was Ray and the brothers were at odds. He went to them and said, look, what is it going to take to make you go away? They said $2.7 million. We want $1 million each and $700,000 to pay our taxes. That's how practical they were. The problem was that Ray didn't have anywhere close to $2.7 million. It's important to remember that McDonald's was precipitously close to folding at every step of the game once Ray got involved, because he didn't have the right scheme to make McDonald's grow until he met Harry Sonneborn, who came along and told him it's not about hamburgers, it's about real estate. Harry saved the day, was able to convince these men who they later called in McDonald's lore the 12 apostles. And those guys came up with the cash that allowed him to buy out the McDonald's brothers and make them go away. The movie says that they got screwed, but they didn't.
Well, I want to understand this carefully. So first of all, $1 million each in current money is about $8 million each, just to put this into some inflation perspective. But the movie says that at the end, the McDonald's brothers wanted some percentage of future profits and that there was a handshake deal for that, but that the brothers never got the money. Your reporting says what actually happened there?
Basically, they got their check and they went back home and lived out the rest of their lives. What made them angry was that they never were given credit in the corporate hemisphere for many, many years. They were sort of erased from history.
The Michael Keaton movie, The Founder, has just opened. But if you want to consult a more journalistic account, Lisa Napoli's book is called Ray and Joan, The Man Who Made the McDonald's Fortune and the Woman Who Gave It All Away. Lisa, thank you for this.
Thank you so much.
The movie and the book are especially interesting about Joan Kroc, Ray's third wife. She later becomes a legendary entrepreneur who gave money to a variety of causes, including the Salvation Army and our colleagues over at National Public Radio. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.